Hey everybody, I'm Riley Blanton, the founder of StarWarsReport.com, and you're listening to my favorite Star Wars discussion-based podcast, The Wampa's Lair, with Jason and Carl.
Welcome to the Wampa's Lair podcast. Deep in the bowels of the frozen ice caverns of Hoth, our hosts, Carl LeClair and Jason Hunt, have been frozen upside down to the cave ceiling with nothing to do but talk all things Star Wars. So make yourselves comfortable, but keep a wary eye out for trouble. Here in the Wampa's Lair.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to another exciting episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This is episode number 56. Where are you taking this thing? I am, as always, one of your hosts, Jason Hunt, and with me, we have the Nerf Herder to my Nerf. We have Mr. Carl LeClair.
Oh, Jason. Oh, I love that. That's right out of the Gospel of John when Jesus says, I shall be the Nerf Herder and there shall be my Nerfs. Oh, way to begin. This one is a total dork. Once again, we are joined by the world-renowned Lord Bruticus, Joe Mignano. How are you tonight, Joe?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing great, but world renown? Oh no, I don't know about that. The after effects of the cheesecake that I constantly eat might be world renowned, but not me. No, of course.
Oh, I don't know, Joe. I mean, you're narrating fan fiction now. You've got your awesome podcast, and your costuming group is constantly growing. Every time I'm on Facebook, it seems like you've got a new member over at the Dark Empire. So you're doing great things. So.
Boy, thank you. I do try.
We are certainly honored to have you on again.
Oh,
it is a pleasure to be here. You know, the Wampa's Lair is a place that I thoroughly enjoy being. But you know what? You guys have a lot of fights in this place. It seems like every time I turn on your podcast, somebody's always fighting somebody. What's up with that?
Well, in a Wampa's Lair, there's a lot of aggression. So we just like to help people vent that aggression in a safe space, which is what the Wampa's Lair is all about. No, I'm just kidding. But but it's funny you should mention that, Joe, because, of course, we did have a matchup from our last episode. And Jason was just joking with me right before we started recording that. He said, I'm going to start putting these things up the day of recording because we got a ton of responses right after he put it up this morning. So, Jason, I'm going to hand the floor over to you.
All right. Well, our matchup for this episode is Darth Maul versus Starkiller, or Galen Merrick, or the Secret Apprentice, or whatever other name you want to call the guy from The Force Unleashed. And our first response over on Facebook is from David Grimillion. He says, Starkiller. And I'm not 100% sure who that even is. And I believe he had a smiley face there. Brian V. Klein says, Starkiller. What he did in The Force Unleashed alone warrants a victory. It would be a close fight if it's Maul post-resurrection in the Clone Wars, but ultimately, Galen would win. Arnold Corso says, Starkiller. He pretty much defeated Palpatine, Maul's master, and of course, Palpatine toyed with Maul like a sick puppet after killing Savage Opress. So, Starkiller definitely seems to be the stronger one here. Jordan Adam Nelson Wignell says, I think Starkiller would win. Joey Laporta, Starkiller, but he was pretty overpowered in the game. Francisco Tudela says, Maul. He nearly defeated the duo of Kenobi and Qui-Gon. In fact, he won during the actual combat, but let his hubris get the better of him. I would have thought Kenobi and Qui-Gon would have defeated Starkiller, so therefore, Maul beats Starkiller. Nathan P. Butler from over at Star Wars Beyond the Film says, well, if you assume that Proxy, Starkiller's droid, is really programmed to fight like the real individual, then we know that Starkiller would win since he beat Proxy as Maul in The Force Unleashed 1. Elisha Da Silva says, the fact that Starkiller was fighting Proxy means that the fight was almost handicapped by the fact that the opponent didn't have any Force powers, although Proxy was able or capable of mimicking some powers. So if I have to pick, it's still going to be Starkiller because he went head-to-head with Vader, wiped the floor with him, and even gave Palpatine a run for his money. And after that Clone Wars episode, Maul is still Palpatine's beach. Sorry, he totally wussed out on that fight. Jess Def Jam says, Starkiller. Starkiller is the turkey at Thanksgiving, and Maul is the yams. Who wants yams? I don't. Moshe Alvarez says, Starkiller, quite easily. And Zach Williams, our final Facebook response, says, Starkiller, for goodness sakes, his force powers are like the force on steroids. And after that, I'm going to need steroids to just keep my voice going. So please, while I get a drink of water, somebody else take the floor after our 10-1 in favor of Starkiller from the Larians. Carl, yeah. Please say something.
Oh, I shall. You did a great job reading all of those, Jason. Good job. Good work.
Oh, thank you.
I like you said, I'm really shocked at how one-sided this was as well. I'm gonna actually go against the consensus here. I know the Larians seem to think Starkiller would win, but in my opinion, I think Darth Maul would. One reason for this is I don't like Starkiller. I think he's a ridiculous character, personally. So part of it's that personal issue. But more than that, the reason I think Darth Maul would win is because, again, you always have to take video. To me, I always take the video games into, you got to put them in their kind of in their place. These are meant to be fun games to make, you know, the gameplay engaging and stuff and an exciting story. But come on, really? Is this really canon? Is Starkiller really almost able to defeat the Emperor? I don't think so. I'm sorry. I don't buy into that at all. I mean, it's fun gameplay, but I don't buy that. And again, defeating Proxy, while sure, like, Proxy might be able to impersonate Maul's moves, he's not Darth Maul. I mean, it's a droid. He doesn't have the Force. Sure, he can mimic his skills, but look at, like, General Grievous. I mean, he was a great lightsaber duelist, but against formidable Jedi, he never stood a chance. So the reason I'm going to give it to Darth Maul is because he's a ferocious fighter. He's very skilled in the Force. And even Starkiller's being trained by old Sith anyway. I mean, he's not fighting Jedi in their prime. And I think it was Francisco that brought this up. You know, when Darth Maul first fights Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan, he really does best almost both of them on his own. And these are two incredible swordsmen. So Darth Maul is certainly somebody to reckon with. So I'm going to give it to Darth Maul. But I'm curious to hear what the Brutal One thinks, because his opinion kind of trumps mine as a Dark Lord of the Sith. So what do you say?
Well, you and I are in about 95% agreement. And I say that because I actually like Starkiller. Starkiller, to me, is canon. And I say that because, to me, the expanded universe and the movies and the books and all of that stuff, to me, the whole thing is Star Wars. Everything Star Wars to me is Star Wars, with the exception of the holiday special and a few other Ewok movies, maybe. But anyway. But that having been said, I'm going to give this to Maul. And the reason why is simply because I believe that Starkiller has an Achilles heel. That Achilles heel being one Juno Eclipse. Now, you see, Starkiller, he starts out as a bad guy, which we like, and then he becomes sort of a neutral and then a good guy. And then he falls for that blonde Juno Eclipse. Yeah, nothing wrong with being blonde, but there's something wrong with that whole love story. I don't like love stories. It's mush. Now Maul, on the other hand, he had no problem running Duchess Satine through with that black lightsaber in the Clone Wars, right? So I think that Maul would use Juno Eclipse to his advantage and, put Starkiller in his place. So I think that's how that whole thing would end up turning out.
Very nice.
Well, there you go. So,
not bad. I just came up with that out of my head. Not bad.
Well, good. So now it's 10-3.
Yes.
And Jason, I know you. I want to hear your response. I know you also have been holding out Sam Witwer's response.
Yes. Well, my response before I get to that is I really don't know. This one, I think, would probably end up in a draw. To be perfectly honest. Simply because, well, for one, the Force Unleashed game, I with the all the force powers that Starkiller uses, I think we automatically have to assume that in the universe of that game, all Jedi and Sith are on a very similar level when it comes to the force powers in that game. And maybe not all of them are quite equal, but I think in general, everyone is in the same area. So I think we have to sort of keep that in perspective. But I think, you know what? No, I'm going to go with Maul on this one, simply out of principle, because everyone else is going with Starkiller, and I haven't been myself lately. I've been going with a lot of the consensus recently. So just because I can, and because it's too close for me to call normally, I'm just going to slide it over to Maul, since it's so one-sided already, and make it a 10-4 matchup here. But I have been holding out, because while I was at Phoenix Comic Con about a month ago, I went up to Sam Witwer's autograph table, and as I was getting my autograph, I asked him this question: who would win if Darth Maul and Starkiller got into a lightsaber duel? And this is the answer that he gave me. He said, well, it would be very, very tough, very fierce fight. Both of them would probably lose an arm, but then they would go and settle their differences over coffee and not kill each other. To which I replied, well, I didn't think Darth Maul would be the coffee-drinking type, to which he replied, well, he's got the yellow teeth, so of course he drinks coffee. So so there you have it, folks, from the source itself, the voice of Darth Maul in the Clone Wars and the voice of Starkiller. He says it's a draw, and they go get coffee and become friends. So
you know, that does make a lot of sense, because if you read the Darth Plagueis novel, they both Starkiller and Maul have a lot in common. They're each a secret apprentice, because Maul was sort of a secret apprentice to... I take that back. I do believe that Plagueis knew about Darth Maul and kind of sort of authorized Palpatine to train him. They kind of threw the rule of two out there. But in a sense, Maul was sort of a secret apprentice to Palpatine, because Palpatine regarded Maul as his apprentice, and to me, Plagueis only saw Maul as a Sith assassin to be disposed of when he was no longer useful. So in a way, Maul was sort of a secret apprentice, and definitely Starkiller was. So maybe they would realize they have a lot in common and become buddy-buddy after all.
Yeah, and then try and take on the Emperor together or something. You know, who knows what those two would wind up to do together. It's a little scary to think about, actually.
They'd probably be great wingmen for each other on dates. So that's my guess. You know, when they're out at the Sith clubs and people are trying to push death sticks on them, you know, they're each other's conscience. So
that's a little bit of a scary thing to think about. If Darth Maul is your conscience,
yeah, that's a good point. Never mind. Yeah, and poor Starkiller would have the hardest job getting girls for a guy with metal legs. So, but anyway. So, this episode, we're going to be discussing our favorite creatures from Star Wars. And just to clarify what we mean by this is, we're not talking about species. We're talking about, well, I guess in a sense we are, but we're talking about non-sentient creatures. So, obviously, like, Biths won't come into account, or, you know, Jawas or Ewoks. Nothing like that.
So beasts of burden and monsters.
Yes. Basically. Exactly. And we got, again, quite a few Larian responses to what, you know, you guys like as far as creatures go. But Jason and I have a couple honorable mentions that, and we're going to also mention some of the things the Larians wrote in. So Jason, why don't you get started? What's your first honorable mention?
My first honorable mention, and this is an honorable mention because it is my absolute least favorite creature in the entire Star Wars saga, and that would be the brain worms from Season 2 of the Clone Wars. I figured if you're gonna, you know, if I have room on my honorable mentions list, I might as well mention my least favorite creature. And the reason why the brain worms are my least favorite creature is because, I mean, come on, that thing goes up in your nose and takes over your brain and controls your thoughts and controls what you do. That's really gross, nasty, and disturbing.
Isn't that from Wrath of Khan?
No, I don't. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, yeah, there's a little bug like that in the beginning of the Wrath of Khan. It goes in through your ear and like attaches to your brain stem. So,
yes. Okay.
I know. Anything going into an orifice? No, thanks.
No, thank you. So yeah, that deserves an honorable mention because it is my absolute least favorite creature in Star Wars. So
makes sense.
What is one of your honorable mentions, Mr. Leclerc?
Well, my first honorable mention is the... I don't know if I'm saying this right, but this is how I've always pronounced it. Yesalami. The creature
Yesalamiri?
Yeah. What is it? Say it again.
I always pronounce it like Yesalamari.
Yesalamari. That sounds more accurate. Yeah, I'm looking at the spelling. That looks correct. I always used to say Yesalami. But whatever. Yeah, I thought those creatures were really cool back when I first read the Thrawn trilogy by Timothy Zahn. I mean, this is a pretty cool creature that creates a bubble around itself to prevent the Force from penetrating it. And initially, like, I remember when I first read that, I was like, wow, that's so cool. But then I was like, oh, but that's kind of dumb. Like, I thought the Force was everywhere. But then as I did some research today, I realized that the reason they adapt to that ability is because the creatures, do you remember the name of that planet? Is it Merker or Marker or something?
Something like Merker. I never.
But there's the creatures.
Timothy Zahn always comes up with the most unpronounceable planets and creatures, I think.
True. But the creatures that hunt the Yesalamir. Crap in a hat. The Y things.
Yesalamari?
Yes, those. They're hunted by creatures that use the Force to try to detect them. So they've evolved to basically shut out the Force so as to not be hunted, which is kind of interesting. And again, it was cool the way Thrawn uses them because, again, up to this, you know, back in 1991, we didn't really know any other way to combat the Jedi, so this was a cool way of kind of balancing out Luke's powerfulness, which I thought was a really cool creation. So that's my first honorable mention. But do you want to read a couple of the Larian responses?
Sure. One second. There we go. Okay. I'll get two of them here real quick. Our first one from Brian Ramsdell says his favorite creature is a Wampa. Duh. Laugh out loud. Thank you, Brian, for that. And then Arnold Corso says the Ronto. That's the big long-necked creature that's seen in Mos Eisley in A New Hope. He says, I love the prehistoric look. It looks a lot like the extinct mammal, and I probably am going to butcher this, the extinct mammal Indricotherium. He knows more about extinct animals than I do because I have no idea which one that is. He says, I wish we saw more of them, or maybe Rontos instead of Eopes in episode 1. So there's a couple of them, and we will save the rest of them for the end of the honorable mentions. So I will jump back into my second honorable mention, which is also the Wampa. I have to say the Wampa somewhere on my list because of the Wampa's lair.
It's just an honorable mention. My God, they're going to pull you apart tonight.
I know. That's why, you know, that's why you're in front this night, tonight.
this is so Jason Hunt.
It is.
He's going to pick one of those like sea creatures from episode 1 for number 1.
No, I won't.
He's going to be like, I like the Eopes.
They're not on my list either.
Joe Hogan is like, oh my God. Anyway, sorry.
But yeah, so the Wampa, I mean, kind of a given with the show here. So, you know, you have to have him somewhere. I mean, come on. I'm just not a snow person, so...
That's true. You are from the hot west, so...
Yes, so living in the desert my whole life, you know, snow and I just never really got, you know, became friends.
Sure.
So, but what's your final honorable mention?
My final honorable mention is the Dianoga, which, again, it's just like this kind of terrifying creature. We never really see it, only its little eye stalk and... It kind of reminded me of an octopus. You know, it has this strong tentacle body to it that pulls Luke under the water. I mean, that's just kind of terrifying to me. I hate octopus. Like, they scare the crap out of me. I'm so terrified of octopi. So to think that there could be one like... And it doesn't even look like it's very deep water when they're in that trash compactor and it just strikes out of nowhere. I mean, I think that's just, that's terrifying. And my biggest fear of dying is drowning. So the fact that it can pull you underwater and there's not a whole lot you can do because it looks like it's pretty darn strong. It's kind of terrifying. So Dianoga definitely deserves to be on the list. And it's, you know, it's one of the creepiest and slimiest creatures we see in Star Wars. So definitely worth mentioning.
This coming from a guy who likes the creepiest and slimiest planet in Star Wars.
I know. I'm an enigma.
Yes, you are. But before we continue, I will read the rest of the Larian responses that we got this time. Jess Def Jam says that his favorite is a Tauntaun. Kyle Avery says Kowakian Monkey Lizard, like Salacious Crumb. And then Benjamin T.D. Kritzman, he says, being the big Mandalorian fan that I am, my first thought is of the Strill, the six-legged, highly intelligent hunting animals native to Mandalore. That is a creature that I need to do research on because I'm not familiar with it. So, very nice.
Yeah, I've never heard of that one either. So, but again, there's a plethora of Star Wars creatures between just the films, let alone the Clone Wars, and then obviously the EU. So,
indeed.
Jason, would you like to kickstart our top five?
Sure. Joe, though, did you have anything you wanted to say
about
the honorable mentions jump into our top five list here?
No, that's okay. Thank you. I have no honorable mentions, unless, of course, if you want to include my ex-wife on that list. She's definitely a creature, but I'm not sure how honorable. But you know what? Leave it to Carl over there to steal some of my thunder. In your honorable mentions, you took a couple of my top five. Now, bear in mind, Carl, that where there is thunder, there is lightning, and you do not want to steal the thunder of the Sith.
No.
So just mind your place there.
Okay, I'm sorry. Whoops. Okay. I can feel Joe's eyes just baring into me, even though I can't see them.
Dead.
I'll buy you a cheesecake to appease.
Oh, that sounds much better.
See, there we go. I found my way to this man's heart.
Or at least to his stomach.
Exactly.
There you go. Just mind the disturbance in the dark side later on.
Yeah. Very nice. All right. I will jump into our top five here. And my number five creature in Star Wars is one that we actually never saw in the films or the Clone Wars, but it was mentioned, and that would be the Nerf. You know, this scruffy looking Nerf herder. The Nerf is the basically, I suppose, the cattle of the Star Wars universe. But they're just everywhere, and so I figure, hey, let's give the Nerf some love. So that's my number five. This is a Nerf. So
that's really cool. And you know, whenever I used to hear that expression, I always thought they were saying Nerf herter, like you hurt a Nerf. It wasn't until like a few years ago that I'm like, oh, Nerf herder, like a sheep herder. Okay, I got it. So yeah, that's a cool one. Joe, what's your number five?
Okay, by the way, Princess Leia calling someone a Nerf herder, like that's some kind of demeaning thing. What's the matter? If you're herd Nerf, are you some kind of low-class citizen? Gee, not good enough for a princess, huh? Gosh. Princess Leia's a little stuck up, huh?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. My number five is a Minoc. Now, what I did with each of my entries, I took a little bit from Wikipedia here, because the Wikipedia, face it, can explain things a little bit better than I can, but I might add lib a little bit of commentary after. It says, a Minoc is a leathery-looking silicon-based organism that grows up to 1.6 meters, 5.25 feet long, with a wingspan of up to 1.25 meters, 4.1 feet long. I promise I won't get too detailed. And that feeds on electrical energy. They are often found leeching power from spacecraft, as Minocs are one of the few species capable of living in the vacuum of space, feeding on stellar radiation, silicone, and other minerals from asteroids and other space debris. Minocs' bat-like wings also allow them to fly in the atmosphere. They are known to reproduce by mitosis. Found across the galaxy, having spread prolifically from their original system, Minocs tend to flock together, migrating annually in large groups. The most notable of these events are the migrations of Rune, during which the skies darken from swarms of these creatures. First seen in Star Wars Episode V, The Empire Strikes Back, feeding on the Millennium Falcon. Now, having seen that movie, we all know that Minox like to feed on power cables, yes? And now the Sith can appreciate that because, face it, the Sith use electricity as a weapon from their fingertips there. And the Minox use electricity as a snack. So you have to respect the Minok. And so the Minok subsequently is number 5 on my list.
Very nice. I mean, Carl?
Yeah. Yeah.
How is it not just amazing to hear the Brutal One narrate that entire paragraph from Wikipedia?
He's so incredible. I mean, no wonder he's doing all these audio drama things now. I could listen to this man's voice any time of the day. I mean, it's so soothing, yet so powerful. So...
I'm not quite sure how to take that.
Take it as a compliment, please. Because that's what it was.
Okay, all right. Just yeah. For your sake, I will.
What's your number 5, Carl?
First off, real quick, I got to say I got to love the Minok as well. And it barely didn't make my list because I really like the Minoks. But, yeah, they are, I don't know, they're just so draining. Okay, that was lame. Anyway, my number 5 is known as the Juba Bird. And guess where it's from, Jason?
Naboo?
Dagobah, of course.
Oh.
So,
Dagobah. Figures.
You can often hear them in the background singing during Luke's training on in Empire Strikes Back. And I had to research this today because I didn't know exactly what it was. It kind of took a while to figure out what exact bird it was, but it's known as the Juba bird. And these are really cool looking feathered birds that live on Dagobah. And what
is that the one that sort of squawks in the background every time?
No, that's a bogwing. So I thought that was the Juba bird that you see a couple times flying across the screen, but those are actually known as bogwings. And those are hunted by the Juba bird. But the cool thing about the Juba bird that I really liked, and of course I didn't know any of this until I did some reading, but again, the initial reason I wanted to pick this, though, is again, I loved that sound that it created for the background of Dagobah. And like whenever I'm listening to just the audio versions of the Star Wars movies on my iPod, like you honestly, without the visuals there, you actually do notice more background noise because you have nothing to like, you know, I don't know. It's almost like your ears are more attentive, which is really cool. But the Juba bird has just like this beautiful sound to it. And what I read today is that actually their voice is meant to be a manifestation of the Force. These are a Force-sensitive creature. And they're initially very shy, but once they befriend you, they're very trustworthy and very trusting. And I can just imagine like Yoda probably domesticates a few of these Juba birds. And evidently the sound of their voice is meant to calm even the most angry of person. So their sound is very sweet and soft and calming. And the reason for that is because its voice is, in a sense, a manifestation of the Force. So I thought that was a really cool little attribute to have. So that's my number 5, the Juba
bird. Wow. Wow. That's something I had no idea ever existed. And that is really cool.
That's a good one. Yeah. Well, again, while I was at work today with nothing to do, I was like, well, since I got some time on my hands, why not do some research? So I did. So, Jason, what's your number 4?
My number 4. And as I am wont to do in these top 5 episodes, I've rearranged my list as I go. And so, as at the moment, my number 4 is the Tauntaun. I mean, it's basically a two-legged snowy horse that smells like a camel. Actually, it would be a two-legged snowy camel, I suppose, with horns and that awesome noise that, you know, I could... Should I do the noise, Carl? Should I make a Tauntaun noise?
I believe that would be absolutely necessary.
All right. Let's see. I'm a little hoarse at the moment, so let's see if this works. It's all right.
Mad props. I gave you that much. You did better than I could.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. But there's Hauntaun. I mean, the chief dinner entree of the Wampa, and very comfy sleeping bag, which I'm sure Carl will talk more about later. But I don't know. They're just one of those creatures that's just sort of always on that list of, like, oh, this is one of my favorite creatures. Nothing particularly special about them to me. I just like them a lot. So, and if they keep you warm in the snow, all the better, because you know how much, you know, I've told you how much Snow and I don't get along already. So, but yeah, Tauntauns.
Yeah, they do make great sleeping bags.
But so that's my number four. Mr. Lord Bruticus, what is your number four?
Real quickly, Carl, your sleeping bag isn't as smelly as a Tauntaun, I hope.
Me too.
Yeah. Oh, my number four is the Salamiri, and I'm an Italian Sith. When I first read that in Heir to the Empire, I thought it was a salami, but no, it's a Salamiri. And it says, the Salamiri were furry lizard-like tree dwellers, on average about 50 centimeters in length, native to the planet Merkur, most known for their ability to repel the Force by creating a Force-neutral bubble. They make bubbles. How fun. This ability evolved in response to predation by the Force-sensitive Vornskers. Many a Salamiri grouped together would expand their Force-neutral bubble by varying distances, sometimes by kilometers. So there you have it, the Salamiri, favorite pet of Grand Admiral Thrawn, to keep that Jedi slimeball clone fella Sabaoth, or Sabaoth, depending on your dialect of Galactic Basic and your region of the galaxy. And, it was kilometers, a big Force bubble. Wow. Also to be respected by the Sith. And so there it is, number four on my list.
Yeah, so the Salamari were on my list at one point, but then they weren't. I mean, it's one of those things I thought about, because of the unique, you know, Force canceling bubble effect that they do. But it was one of those things where ultimately I just rearranged my list so many times that it just didn't end up on it. The only thing that has remained consistent on my list is my number one, and possibly my number three, but I'm not sure about that. So, but yeah, so good pick. I like it. But we shall see what everyone else has for us. So yeah, Carl, what is your number?
Well, first off,
four?
I'm really curious what your number one is. But my number four is the Sarlacc.
Very nice.
And, you know, the only people I know of that could possibly, you know, wrangle a Sarlacc are, you know, Chris Smith and Matt Cranky. But other than that, those things are unstoppable. And, you know, I mean, again, when we first see the Sarlacc in Return of the Jedi, especially in the original edition, you know, it just looks like this gaping maw. And even, you know, even in the special edition with the beak, which is actually just a tongue, you know, it still just looks like this terrible, like, not necessarily that scary of a creature. It looks like a hole in the ground with teeth. But if it's really cool if you look at, you know, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have seen this, but the picture they have, basically the diagram of how far down it extends on Wikipedia, this full diagram of all the different sections and anatomy of a Sarlacc. This thing is massive. And what I like about it, again, is it's kind of the fear factor. I mean, you know, when Jabba is sentencing Han, Luke, and Chewie to be put to death by the Sarlacc, you know, you're going to be cast into a pit. Han's like, oh, that doesn't sound so bad. Where you will, you know, and 3PO elaborates, you know,
Will you be digested for a period of a 1,000 years?
On second thought, let's forget that, huh? you know, like...
Should have bargained, Jabba.
Yeah. So...
Oh, not be sure. Ho, 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 ho.
Sorry.
Good.
Go ahead.
Good, Jason.
continue.
But yeah, I mean, I think the fear factor, and it essentially what the Sarlacc does is once it starts to digest you, it puts you into one of its several different stomachs, and then these neurotoxins and fibers essentially penetrate your skin and your muscle and your tissue to hold you bound into the stomach. And then this, like, basically absorbing acid slowly digests you over a long period. And it's a very unpleasant, long, painful experience. And, you know, these Sarlaccs are, like, they're a really deadly creature. And, again, this is such a cool creature to create for Star Wars because it puts in this fear of being devoured. I mean, obviously, yes, a lot of these creatures can devour you and eat you. But there's something about a Sarlacc especially. I mean, you literally... you fall in and there's no getting out. Unless you're Boba Fett, there is no getting out. I mean, these things are terrifying. And I think especially for young people who were watching Return of the Jedi, I mean, what a frightening thing to be swallowed up by the ground and, I mean, slowly digested. I mean, these things are really deadly and not to be trifled with. So that's why my number four is the Sarlacc.
Very nice.
Carl, are you sure that you're not a biology teacher by any chance? That was quite grotesque. Yeah. I applaud you.
Well, you know, I wanted everyone to share my fear. So, you know, and I did have some time on my hands today to read all about that. So, and the guy working across the hall is a biology teacher, so maybe he just rubbed off on me. So
there you go.
There we are. That's
what it is. Year. So, anywho, Jason, we're into the top three now. Why don't you?
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Why don't you bring us in?
All right. Well, my number three, my third favorite creature in Star Wars, is the Bantha. Basically the elephant of Star Wars. And elephants are my favorite animal in the real world. And when the Bantha is played by an elephant in the original A New Hope, then they automatically make my list somewhere. But no, I really do like Banthas. Big, woolly, horned creatures that they are. I think they're fantastic. And because, I don't know if you've noticed this, but it's one of those things where I was sort of thinking about how do sand people ride so many of these things and keep hidden? Well, if you'll notice, they walk along, but they've got this big, you know, tail thing that comes down behind them. And so it drags along the ground behind them and sort of helps to wipe away their tracks as they walk. And how something that hairy can survive in the desert, I always thought was kind of odd, and which made it cool to me, because you know how odd I am. And so if it's odd, I automatically like it. But the thing that really sealed the deal was the behind-the-scenes photos of them taking the face, the mask, off of the elephant, so the elephant could, you know, get some air as they were preparing to record, which I thought was awesome. And in one of the shots, right after the Tusken Raider jumps on to the Bantha, as it begins to walk away in A New Hope, you can actually see the trunk of the elephant hanging out from underneath the chin hair of the Bantha, which I always thought was kind of funny. And so because of that, because I think they're kind of cool anyways, the Bantha is my number three favorite creature in Star Wars. So
certainly a iconic creature, to say the least. But it's funny, yeah, there's so many. I mean, even in like our own planet here called Earth, there's so many creatures that live in these like really extreme climates yet don't seem to be built for it, you know. So again, yeah, like a bantha, like living in a desert, like gosh, it must have, you know, it must have a great circulatory system or something to keep the blood flowing and keeping them cool or something, because that doesn't seem practical at all. So it'd be like you running around in wool pants and a wool jacket all the time in Tucson in the summer. Ridiculous.
No.
But yeah, I barely left the Bantha off my list as well, too, because, I mean, they are such cool-looking creatures. But they didn't quite make my list. So... Lord Bruticus.
Yes?
Who made top three for you?
Oh, my number three is the Vornsker. And according to Wikipedia, it says Vornskers are wild, vicious canines. Doggies. But they're not cute little doggies. No. They're vicious canines that have the unusual ability to hunt using the Force. This ability evolved to help them hunt Isalamiri. But a side effect is that they interpret Force-sensitive people as their favorite prey animal. Vornskers are primarily nocturnal hunters and use whip-like, mildly venomous tails to stun prey before finishing it off with their teeth. They are normally sedate during the day, but hunger or other factors will drive them to hunt during daylight hours. I like that. Vornskers confusing people for a salamiri, four sensitive people for a salamiri, kind of like the way great white sharks often confuse surfers for their favorite snack being seals, or sea lions, yeah. So, seals and sea lions, I suppose. So you see there, I like that, and I live in California, so I can identify with that. And there you have it, the Vornsker, not quite worthy enough to be the number two or the number one seat here, but nevertheless, very intimidating. And so the Sith respect the Vornsker and their force abilities.
Yes, yes. And I know all about ferocious canines. I work at the PetSmart Pet Hotel, and it's always the little dogs that you got to watch out for. The big dogs just want to jump on you and lick you, but the little dogs bite.
Yeah, they want to compensate for their small stature.
It's very true. I had a little tiny poodle bite my finger the other day, and it was bleeding, and it was not fun.
Whoever owns that poodle, tell them to get a real dog.
But the Chihuahua is the most terrifying, because they always look angry and ready to eat your face. Which is why I like hanging out with the Mastiffs. But anyways, very nice, Joe. Carl, what is your number three?
Well, my number three is yet another iconic Star Wars creature known as the Gungan. I'm just kidding.
you're a little bit discriminatory there, Carl.
I said Gungans, non-sentient creatures.
Hey!
Oh, boy. Kidding.
Captain Tarples is sentient.
Oh, sure he is. Oh, hey, you, stop on there!
Stop on there.
Anyway.
Ouch time!
My number three is the Rancor. And, again, very iconic beast, and they are from Dathomir, which is such an awesome planet that we've gotten to explore so much more during the Clone Wars. And one of the reasons I actually like the Rancor so much is it actually goes all the way back to my childhood, and it was always one of my favorite toys to play with. My cousin had the original 1983 Rancor figure, and I know for a fact that we have at least two Ewoks still in the belly of that Rancor, Ewok action figures, because when you put a creature into that toy's mouth, you weren't getting it back. And yet we still figured it'd be fun to put Ewoks in a Rancor's mouth. But I always loved playing with that toy. And then I also, you know, I mean, it's so cool to see it in Return of the Jedi. And, I mean, incredibly well filmed for the time. Also, what adds to the appeal of the Rancors is knowing that they were used by the witches of Dathomir and the Night Sisters on Dathomir. They would domesticate Rancors. I mean, talk about an unstoppable duo. A Night Sister riding a Rancor, that's pretty terrifying. You know, in the novel The Courtship of Princess Leia, which is the novel where Han and Leia get married, they have to go to Dathomir, and Luke has such a hard time dealing with the Dathomirian witches and also, you know, hordes of Rancors. I mean, this is a very powerful and terrifying creature. So, yeah, the Rancor takes number three for me.
Very nice. Very good. I shall reserve comment.
Okay. Well, wow, then, if it's not what you're about to say, I'm very shocked. But what is your number two then, Jason?
My number two, and I sort of kind of cheated on this one because I wanted to have both of these on my list, but I didn't think that separating them up sort of put them lower and lower on my list than I wanted them, so since they're from the same planet, used in the same places, I figured, why not? I'll put them together. And that would be the Caddu and the Famba from Naboo. The Caddu, of course, being the two-legged, duck-faced steeds that the Gungans ride, and the Fambas being the gigantic, you know, lizard, turtle-looking things that carry the shield generators. And I don't know. I've always just liked them. I had one of the very first action figures I got when The Phantom Menace came out was the Jar Jar on Caddu. And I always thought they were funny looking and cool at the same time. The fact that they're both amphibious and can swim underwater kind of was A little bit of a surprise to me when I first found that out, but I thought it was really cool. And the fact that the Gungans sort of look like the Kaddu just amused me. But the fact that the Fombas were just so big and dinosaur-like, and as a child I was totally into dinosaurs, still think they're really cool to this day, but I don't know. I always thought they were awesome. So there we go, the Kaddu and the Famba.
Those both sound, they sound like a kind of dance, don't they? Do you Kaddu? No, I Famba.
What kind of club are we going to tonight? It's a Kaddu club. Oh, excellent.
Oh. But
will,
I wanted to...
will there be shield generators there?
No, that's at the Famba club.
Oh, right, of course. But I wanted to go to Tosh Station to pick up some power converters. I know, I cut you off. Sorry, Jason.
But yeah, no, so I think I was pretty much done there, so.
Well, I'm not surprised something from The Phantom Menace made it into your top three, so.
Oh, sorry, not really. I'm
no,
not
why would you be sorry? This is why I picked you as my co-host.
Yep. Because I do weird things like that.
Indeed. And it's so
very
incredible.
Admirable.
Yes.
Well, thank you.
Joe. What is your number two?
My number two is certainly no number two. My number two is the Krayt Dragon. It says here, Krayt Dragons grew continuously throughout their lives to an average length of 45 meters and weight of 20,000 kilograms. They could live to be 100 years old and did not weaken appreciably with age. An ancient Krayt dragon was the oldest and biggest of all Krayt dragons. They could be found on the highest mountains of Tatooine. A fierce hunter, the Krayt dragon became an important part of indigenous cultures on Tatooine. The Krayt dragon was thought by some xenobiologists to have descended from the Duonuoguin, also known as star dragons. Although no substantial evidence was offered in support of a connection to the Duonuoguin, the Krayt dragon was a proven relative of the smaller Kell dragon. In honor of the beast's sheer power and ferocity, the Jedi Order named the Sheen and Demso form of lightsaber combat the Way of the Krayt Dragon. When summer mating season began, the howls of Krayt dragons filled the canyons of Tatooine. The collection of frenzied mating beasts scared even the mightiest sand people away. Obi Slimebor Kenobi mimicked a Krayt dragon hunting cry when he scared the raiders away from Luke Skywalker in Zero BBY, in that movie of the classic series there, yeah. So you see, not even sand people want anything to do with Krayt dragons. They are fearsome. Even the Jedi use them to scare people away, definitely to be respected by the Sith. And so they are number two on the brutal list.
Well, can you just keep reading? Yeah, Krayt dragons are so cool. And unfortunately, all we ever get to see in the actual films is the skeleton of the one that C-3PO is, you know, walking past. What an awesome creature. So,
indeed. I wish we kind of got to see one.
I know. I know. Well, I know in, like, Robot Chicken Star Wars, you see two Krayt dragons. But I don't know if that's exactly what they're supposed to look like or not. So I haven't Wikipedia'd them or anything yet. So, but yeah, I like how the call of the Krayt dragons changing every time they re-release a Star Wars, though. That's getting kind of annoying.
Maybe they're changing their mating habits.
Yeah, that's true. Obi-Wan knows exactly the hormones of a Krayt dragon. So
makes you wonder, huh?
Not as much of a hermit as we thought. He's out at those Kaddu clubs.
When you live by yourself for about 20 years, you know, you never know.
Yeah, everything starts to look good. Anyway,
anywho, Carl.
Yes, my number two.
Along to your number two, please.
Well, why don't I just hop on a Tauntaun and ride him to number two? So, yes, of course, my number two is the Tauntaun. Jason gave us a great sound effect earlier. I had him doing that all the time at C6. It was pretty wonderful.
He did.
Yeah. The thing, the first thing that always grabs me with the Tauntaun, of course, is the sound they make. It's awesome. And they look kind of like furry dinosaurs to me, too. I mean, they look like little T-Rexes. Yeah. They are really cool with those cool little horns that curve around their head. And I like kind of pack animals. They're really neat, and they seem very passive. And I don't know. It's mostly just the visual of the Tauntaun. Whenever it's on screen, I really enjoy it. And these are creatures that they're very tough creatures. I mean, they survive in the snows of Hoth. If I could ride a Tauntaun to work every day, I'd be a very happy camper. So. number two is definitely the Tauntaun. So, and again, they convert to a sleeping bag, so it's pretty great. So we're into the number ones.
Oh my, number ones!
I have to. I must confess, you do that pretty well. Oh my!
Well, thank you. I practiced it a lot, actually. But my number one, if we're gonna start in on this, is the Rancor. This is my absolute favorite creature in all of Star Wars. It was number one when we suggested this this topic a while back, and still stayed there even through the entirety of my list, basically reshuffling itself. Even throughout the podcast. But I don't know. They're just, part of it was when I was a kid, it was just like the terror of having that down in your basement, basically. You know, Jabba has it down in his basement, and no kid wants to go down into the basement when the power's out or, it's dark or something like that. Cause who knows what's lurking in there. But if that was there, that you're gone. Sorry. But, I don't know, the Rancor scene was always a scene that I liked for some unknown reason to me. And it's always been my favorite creature. It's sort of like one of the most iconic Star Wars creatures of all time now. And it's made its way, the Rancor has made its way through much of the EU and the video games and Clone Wars even. It showed up, there was a variant species, a jungle Rancor, that showed up on Felucia in an episode of the Clone Wars. And there was a deleted scene from the movie in which Asajj Ventress was supposed to chase Anakin and Ahsoka down into a Rancor pit in the monastery there on Teth when she's trying to regain Rota the Hutt, that it was there. But another big use of the Rancor was also in The Force Unleashed on Felucia, and there were Rancors everywhere, and that awesome-looking bull Rancor with the horns that, the elephant horns that basically came down to the ground and everything. That was pretty awesome. But not only the fact that I like the design and I think the creature is fun and the toys are great, because I've got the Power of the Force Rancor and then the more recent one that came out a couple of years ago in my closet as we speak. But the other reason why I like it so much is because, and I was thinking about this earlier today, is at the point that we're at in Return of the Jedi when we hit the Rancor and then the Sarlacc, that is lifted directly from one of my favorite Greek myths of all time, and that would be the Odyssey. And the Rancor is essentially the Cyclops Polyphemus that Odysseus has to kill in order to escape it, which Luke ends up doing in the film. And then later on, they have to escape the whirlpool, and I forget the name of the whirlpool, but that's essentially the Sarlacc. And so those two creatures have always been like favorites of mine because it references directly to one of my favorite myths. But the Cyclops sequence in the Odyssey has always been my favorite part of the Odyssey. And so that is another reason why the Rancor remains crowned beyond reach of any other creatures as my favorite creature of Star Wars.
Well, I'm proud of you, Jason. That's a darn good pick.
So,
and a darn good explanation, dare I say. Well, that was very well prepared. I'm speechless. I don't even know what to say.
Well, thank you. Well, good then. I mean, you can say what your number one is.
Oh, touché. 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 Well, my number one is actually very closely related to the Rancor, I think. I like Rancors, by the way. It just when they, that one Rancor in Return of the Jedi ate my favorite character, Ula the Slave Girl, I kind of had a falling out with the Rancor.
let's not forget the Rancor Keeper, the sexiest man in Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, I was weird. I was told once that I should costume as that guy.
Oh my God, you should. That'd be awesome.
No. I look like Robin Williams. I'm so hairy, I'd be better off costuming as a Wookiee. Wouldn't have to put much more hair on. That's okay. My number one is a Tyrantitech. So a creature so cool that the apparently, according to Wikipedia, the plural of Tyrantitech is Tyrantitech. It says, Tyrantitech were creatures which fed off the blood of Force-sensitives and inhabited caves and tombs like those on Korriban, strong with the dark side of the Force. Several guarded the entrance to a section of Nagasado's tomb. Tyrantitech resembled Rancors, except they had a number of spines growing from their backs and a pair of flaps or tusk-like projections attached to their mouths. They also had massive claws, four to a hand. The tusks and claws of a Tyrantitech were highly venomous. It was theorized that they were once Rancors, subjected to mutations by the Sith. When the dark side was weak in the galaxy, Tyrantitechs could hibernate and remain dormant for many years, only to return when the dark side was strong again. So you see, Tyrantitechs, quite possibly Rancors that were turned into Tyrantitechs by ancient Sith alchemy and sorcery and all that, because that's what we Sith like to do. We'll take something bad or mean and make it badder or meaner. So there you have it, my number one, the highly venomous wannabe Rancor, used to be Rancor, known as the Tyrantitech.
Very nice.
Of course you would pick something that feeds on the dark side.
But of course.
And that was in which one of the Knights of the Old Republic game was that in?
You're asking me? I have no idea. It was in Knights of the Old Republic.
I've
never heard
it was
of
in
this.
One of them, and I don't remember if it was one or two or maybe both. I'm not sure.
One Nagasada was in, it was that one. Yeah.
I think it was one.
Okay, I've never even played them, so I wouldn't know. But that's a good one. That's a very brutal choice.
No, I thank you. I'll take that as a compliment too.
yes, it is. It is intended as a compliment. Carl, why don't you round us out here with our list with your number one?
Oh, sure. Obviously, nothing too shocking, but it's of course the Wampa. How can I be part of the Wampa's lair and not have it be my favorite creature? I mean, we do have a love-hate relationship. I mean, he does often hang me upside down and threaten to eat me. But there's love behind that. There's love.
right.
But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I don't have excellent explanations like the two of you did for your number one, which stinks. It's almost like I'm literally looking at my notes right now, and my notes get more and more short as I get further into my list. And I think it's just because, again, it's just I just like the thing. I just love the Wampa. Again, there's nothing specific I can say as to why. I mean, it's a terrifying-looking creature.
It's the Abominable Snowman of Star Wars.
Exactly, and I love the Abominable Snowman in Rudolph, especially when he becomes a good one. And that's always my hope. Every time I watch Empire Strikes Back, I always hope that when Luke falls down off, out of the cuts himself free, I always hope instead of cutting off the Wampa's arm, he jumps off a cliff with it and then changes it into the friendly Wampa. And it comes back to Echo Base and puts a tree on the, puts a star on the big tree and, everything's great. But it is not to be so.
Just want the title of Episode 7 to be Revenge of the One-Armed Wampa, don't you?
It would be, that'd be so fantastic. Jason's still hoping that Episode 7 is going to be called Episode 7, Jar Jar, the New Hope.
Oh, gosh. as much as that thought entertains me, no. Jar Jar's story at this point is probably over.
Yeah.
Sad face. Very sad face. Well, Jar Jar sad face at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Oh no.
Yes. Anyway,
so the Wampa is going definitely be my number one. Merely because it's awesome. I mean, this thing is so cool. Comes out of nowhere to attack Luke. I mean, the Wampas are essentially, like, they can dodge the detection of the Rebels because they blend in and can hide under snowdrifts. I mean, there's no way for even radar to pick them up. And I remember reading something today on Wikipedia. There's something about the fact that their blood is, I think, so cold or something that it's actually almost impossible to even pick them up on detectors. So these Wampas are incredibly, you know, scary creatures. And like most predatory creatures, they typically hunt on their own, occasionally in packs. But and also the Wampa caves are actually all dug by hand by Wampas. They dig their own lairs and create their own caves. So there is some ingenuity to these Wampas. And to some degree, I still don't know if I like this or not, but in one of the EU novels, I think it's called Darksaber. It's kind of a follow-up novel to the Jedi Academy trilogy by Kevin J. Anderson. Luke ends up having to go back to Hoth, and he's attacked by a one-armed Wampa, and it's enraged because it recognizes Luke and his lightsaber, which I don't know if I buy into that. Like, it's a little silly, but and he was like leading a tribe of Wampas. But again, like, these Wampas are just—they're such cool-looking creatures, and again, like, not to be messed with. I mean, they are terrifying, incredibly strong. I mean, it takes out his Tauntaun in one swipe. You know, I mean, yeah, this is why Wampa is definitely my number one. So there you go.
Very nice.
These are our favorite creatures.
Yes. Yes, there are. Before we wrap things up and get into our new matchup and everything, we had a nice little discussion at the end of our last episode, in which we had an email from Jackson talking about how he's in high school and how some of his friends say he's dumb or that Star Wars is stupid because he likes Star Wars. So we had a nice little discussion about that, and we actually got a response over on Facebook from someone, from Arnold Corso. He says, interesting discussion on the most recent podcast. He says, when I was younger, I remember Star Wars was seen as cool, but Star Trek was geeky. I never remember anybody being picked on for liking Star Wars. Maybe for being totally obsessed, but not for liking it. It sounds like nowadays Star Wars has gone down in popularity amongst younger fans. I'm curious if anybody has any thoughts as to why. Was it the fact that some see the prequels and the Clone Wars as more kid-oriented? Are kids today just less tolerant? And I figured we could, you know, maybe take the last couple minutes here of this show and address some of those questions. Because we have, someone who is very intelligent here on the podcast. In the form of Lord Bruticus, and would like to get his opinion on this, as well as Carl's. So, do either of you who wants to start off this discussion?
Carl, you go ahead, sure. And then I'll speak my brutal piece afterwards. I got a few words for that brute, and I'm the brute here, not that guy. So go ahead.
A couple of quick things. I actually don't think that Star Wars has gone in down in popularity among younger people. I mean, this kid he's a high school age kid, which again, I think that's a unique experience. Anybody who's in high school, I mean, you're battling with that. Who am I? Who do I want to be? I got to be accepted. So I think that age group is just as intolerant as it's always been throughout the history of, you know, mankind. I mean, it's an odd age. I actually find that Star Wars has become incredibly popular among younger kids because of how youth-oriented the prequels and Clone Wars are. Again, that's not to say that obviously older fans don't still enjoy it, because of course they do. But I think that Star Wars actually has become more kid-oriented. And conversely, I think that there's a lot of older fans who have become less crazy about Star Wars because of how kid-oriented it's become. A lot of what I call some of the purest fans, the people that, you know, kind of hate the prequels and hate all the changes. I mean, you're losing – Star Wars lost a lot of fan base with the Clone Wars and the prequels because of how kid-oriented it was. And again, I mean, I don't think that it's strictly for kids. Of course not. But it certainly is much more so than the original trilogy. It seems like you see more and more kids now with, like, Clone Wars sneakers and backpacks and, dare I say, Jar Jar Binks outfits on, you know. I mean, so I actually don't think that Star Wars has gone down in popularity among kids. I think among high school age kids, it's still not as popular. Well, I would say it's not as popular among high school age kids like it always hasn't been, because, again, it's kind of this odd stage where some kids just see Star Wars as kind of goofy and nerdy. So, yeah, I don't know. That's what I think. So, I don't know. What do you think, Brutal One?
Well, I could say a lot of what I think, but first of all, I've said it many times because it's the truth. The very first movie that I ever saw in a movie theater in 1977 was, take a wild guess, Star Wars. And I had to have every single toy that there was. Of course, I didn't get what I wanted. That didn't know what child does, right? But my point being, of course, that Star Wars has always will be geared toward children, and but then again, everybody. I am 40 years old, and listen to this. So you see, I have one of these with me almost everywhere I go, if not physically, then in my mind, because I enjoy Star Wars that much. And I think everybody does. It doesn't matter, everybody that likes Star Wars. It doesn't matter what age group that you are. This is perfectly normal. To be teased, put down, bullied, downplayed, whatever you want to call it, there is nothing wrong with liking what you enjoy. Anybody that ascribes to a certain type of group, whether it's Star Wars or LGBTism or whatever, to be put down because you identify with something is nothing more than bullying. And you know what we all think about bullying, don't we? It's a disease, and it needs to be gotten rid of, yes. So if I can be 40 years old, carry a lightsaber, love Star Wars so much that I put something out there like you find at holonetaudiodramas.com, selfless plug, then you can definitely see why there is absolutely nothing wrong with being a Star Wars fan, regardless of how old you are. There, enough said. Be in high school, enjoy Star Wars, who cares what the other little brats say? You are of an intellect higher than theirs because you appreciate something that is geared towards the family, all ages. I think then that you know where your values lie, and that's something that Star Wars has a lot of value, right? Right, yes. There. Yeah. That's the brutal opinion.
Well, it's a damn good one.
All right. Let's see. My little thought on this is... And I think after, and I may be in the minority here on this podcast with this opinion, but I think after Revenge of the Sith came out, in the mind of the general public, Star Wars sort of faded. I'm not sure if I would say it became less popular, but after Revenge of the Sith and every, you know, the six films, they were all wrapped up and everything, Star Wars sort of became less of a big deal because there was, you know, at that time, no one thought that we'd have more of them. And so we had the Clone Wars, obviously, which, you know, people like us, you know, we really enjoyed that. And, of course, the younger kids really enjoyed that. But most people were like, oh, it's not, you know, a Star Wars movie, so, you know, whatever. So I think Star Wars just sort of faded from, you know, out of sight, out of mind sort of thing. And in that regards, maybe became a little less popular. But now that we've got the announcement that 7, 8, and 9, plus spin-off movies and a whole other TV series are in the works, Star Wars is getting thrust directly back into the spotlight to a point where it's going to be the only thing that matters in the summer of 2015. And that's not just from Star Wars fans. It's by everybody, I think. And as far as the kids today less tolerant, maybe. I think it's the idea that the internet offers the anonymity, and so people decide to be less filtered on the internet, and then sometimes translate that into real life in the form of bullying and other things at school. I don't know. I think as far as high school is concerned, high school is still high school and is, you know, the same sort of situations that have always gone on in high school. I don't know. But I think, like I said, I think nowadays with new Star Wars being made, I think we're going to see a rise in popularity amongst all ages. That we haven't seen for the last, let's say, you know, 7-8 years or so.
You know, some high schools have sci-fi clubs, if I remember correctly. When I was in high school, Star Trek The Next Generation was all the rage, you know, and there were new episodes every week on TV, that kind of thing. And some of us loved Star Trek, some of us loved Star Wars. I was one of those rare breeds that liked both. And to be honest, we actually had a sci-fi club in my high school. Really, my biggest friends were everyone that was in that club. And I would say, if you don't have something like that in your school, see about starting one. And you might be amazed at how much interest there might be in that.
Yeah, it's a great idea. I was homeschooled, so the sci-fi club at my school consisted of me. So,
yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, I think Star Wars, it's still for young kids, middle-aged kids, adult kids, like the three of us. You know, I mean, Star Wars it always has offered people a point of connection. And, you know, when you're real young, I mean, and up through high school, I mean, kids are going to always pick on you for stuff you like. Kids who are, you know, like I was saying on the last show, like, and I know this from working in high school for the past 3 years, you know, kids are always, especially teenagers, they're always intimidated by people who are passionate about something, because so few teenagers are passionate about anything these days. So when they see somebody else passionate about something, they're jealous of it, they feel threatened by it, and their response is to belittle you. But everybody grows out of that stage. I mean, I remember when I first started saying about how much I love Star Wars when I was in college, I finally started to admit it to my friends. They all were like, yeah, we do too. Like, we love it too. And people that didn't were like, well, whatever, I don't care for it, but that's cool. You know, I mean, I feel like people, when you mature, you grow out of that stage. And, you know, if you are experiencing people who are belittling you because of your fandom of Star Wars, then the biggest thing I would say is, first off, have hope, because it'll stop, trust me. And also, like, Joe just gave a great suggestion, like, create your own fantasy group or sci-fi club at school, or even, you know, in your own free time. Because that's the greatest thing about Star Wars, is the fact that it builds connections, and that's what makes it so great. And if people are, you know, they want to belittle that passion, let them. You know, it's too bad for them that they can't understand what that's like. So, there's our piece on that.
Indeed.
But before we actually give our next matchup, I just wanted to ask Joe a couple of real quick questions.
Oh, really? Okay. Yes. You're brave. Okay.
Well, I wanted to just open it up for you for a minute, because I know you've been doing some awesome things with these fan films and starting new pages, a new website, I think. You just narrated something from a fan fiction audio award or something. I'm not exactly sure all the stuff that's going on, so kind of an open-ended question, but what the heck's going on over there? What have you been up to?
That is an open-ended, kind of loaded kind of question, but I'll do my best to answer it accordingly. Why, thank you. I've been involved with Dark Empire Radio for a few years, and while that's still going on, it's changed. I don't make the episodes on there that used to, where, you know, kind of like the Wampa's Lair, the episodes are numbered and all that stuff. Yeah, those days are done. It's now strictly a fan fiction podcast with the occasional special report and extra stuff having to do with the Dark Empire Costume Club. But I launched about a month or two ago something called HollowNetAudioDramas.com, and HollowNet Audio Dramas was adopted as the official charity project of the Dark Empire Costume Club. But regardless of that, what HollowNet Audio Dramas really is a collection of all of the fan fiction that I've done on Dark Empire Radio, some of it remastered, and all of the new stuff that I put on Dark Empire Radio fan fiction will also be on HNAD. We call it the HNAD Project. It sounds like a disease. And and I'm kind of quoted on the website there. If you read, go to the About the Narrator or About the HNAD Project. HNAD sounds like a disease, but really, I think we can all agree that illiteracy is a disease, and what the HollowNet Audio Project aims to do, HollowNet Audio, I call it HNAD Project, because what HollowNet Audio Dramas aims to do is to bring fan fiction to those that can't read, and to the blind that can't see. They have no way of appreciating fan fiction, and so that's the charity aspect of the whole project. So we offer CDs. I have a CD machine here now, and I have a whole volume, a CD album of 9 tracks, totaling almost 2 hours of fan fiction. It's available to anyone that wants one. They can order up to 10 at a time through the website, and they can listen on the website to all of what we've done so far. I'm halfway into creating a second volume already. And basically, it's for anyone that enjoys quality fan audio, fan fiction. But again, the target audience is blind Star Wars fans and really those that can't read, and to promote literacy. We had an event at a library here not too long ago where I gave 30 CDs out, and I've been sending CDs across the country to little regional chapters of the Dark Empire and to people that want them. And they're getting quite popular, I think, because I've been making a lot of them. So I had to order a CD duplicator just to, keep up with the demand, if you will. But they can be listened to, downloaded, and of course you can find that content on the Dark Empire Radio podcast on iTunes if you're into the iTunes kind of thing. So that's what I've been doing more of. And of course, you mentioned fan films. Yeah, there's the Rage of the Brutal One animated fan film out there. That's slowly in progress. There's the first little tidbit of part two is out there now. Just Google Rage of the Brutal One. Easy to find it. But HollowNetAudioDramas.com. That's what I'm doing these days, and I'm having a ton of fun doing it. Fan fiction is something that I enjoy specifically, not just reading, writing it rarely as far as I'm concerned, but narrating it, setting it to music. All of the stuff on there is set to music and some sound effects. The latest story that we have is called Maximum Firepower, Maximum Efficiency, which was the winner of a little mini contest done by our good friends at Crossed Sabers Reviews, who is also a supporter of the HNAT project. And what they have now is something called the Feel the Force Awards. I don't know if you've touched on that here on the Wampa's Lair at all, definitely something that to look forward to in May of next year. So I think the idea of that is to bring back the old fan film awards that Lucasfilm used to do, but now they're gearing towards not just fan films, but fan art and fan fiction. And of course, HollowNet Audio Dramas is also featured on CrossedSabersReviews.com. My SoundCloud account is pasted all over there. That's really awesome. So this coming May, there's going to be like an award show, and that's sponsored by AlmostNerdy.com. And I think they're getting more sponsors, and we're trying to get the word out about the Feel the Force Awards. But HollowNet Audio Dramas is something that I really enjoy doing. It's my way of giving back to all of those fans out there that are literate, that the writers, and I like to keep the stories around 10 minutes or so in length, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less, and just give back and to help out people that really love Star Wars, but they have difficulty reading, and this is one way to bring the fun to them as well. And so that is my brutal endeavor at present.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, you're a very busy man.
Indeed. <All right.
laughs> but yeah,
we want to. I think we're going to try and get Robert Jenner on to try and talk about some of the fan Force Awards a little bit later, hopefully this summer. We're still trying to figure out scheduling and everything. But yeah, I'm very interested to see how this all gets going and stuff. So
yeah, it's and nice again, to see. Just another example of, you know, what good work Star Wars fans do. I mean, Joe is, a shining example of a leader in the Star Wars community, especially, I mean, he started with the costuming community, but now, you know, this, I mean, using that gifted voice of yours to, you know, to invite people to write these awesome stories, to, you know, volunteer your time and talent to record these audio dramas, and then even more to give them out to people with, you know, disability. I mean, just what an example of, you know, what a great person you are, and what a great person you are to the Star Wars community. So,
oh, gee, thanks. I do want to say, too, that you can play all of the stories on the website. You can download them from the website, too, in MP3 format. And if you guys would like to ever feature any of the stories there, there's well over a dozen of them. I think there's 13 or 14 of them up now. By all means, feel free to play them on your podcast here. Not that I'm trying to pimp myself out, no, but the idea is to, you know, bring the fun to as many people as possible. And if you guys want a CD, I'd be happy to send you one. Yeah, readily audio, playable audio CDs, that thing. They're free, by the way. They don't cost anything.
Well, I know listening to your voice, read anything, definitely Star Wars would be excellent, so.
very good. So. Did you have any more questions for Lord Bruticus?
No, that was it. I just wanted everyone to realize all the awesome stuff he's been doing and what a huge outreach there's been to this fan community and what a leader Joe's been in all of it. So I wanted that to be brought up. So, again, he's given you websites to check out. Check them out. Definitely.
My cat is over here meowing and agreeing with you.
Good. Good. But anyway, Jason has a matchup he wants to introduce for us, which I'm anxious to hear what it's going to be.
Yes. In keeping with today's topic of the favorite creatures, Carl and I were talking earlier that we wanted to have a creature matchup. But we hadn't quite decided on one before we started the show, so I was thinking hurriedly and finally wrote something down because I was reminded of a picture that I saw online somewhere, and I don't remember which website it was, but it was a picture of it was like a behind-the-scenes picture of the Rancor in Jabba's palace fighting I'm not sure if this was the actual crate dragon, but it was some sort of dragon down in the pit of the Jabba's palace, and I think I remember hearing somewhere that that was going to be something that they were toying with, the idea of having the Rancor fight in the movie at some point, but I could be mixing that up with Tales from Jabba's Palace, the book. But anyways, I was thinking that this matchup will be that fight, the Rancor versus a crate dragon, not a full-grown crate dragon, because we all know how that would turn out, but a crate dragon of about the same size as a Rancor. So, and I will try to track down that picture for our matchup post later on this week. So, but yes, that will be something that I think would be fun.
A quick question about that: would it be a crate dragon during mating season, by any chance? that might be a factor.
It might be busy. He and Obi-Wan might be busy.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Well, that will be something that we can leave up to the Larians out there. If they want to have the crate dragon in mating season, fine. If they don't...
Probably be a bit more rambunctious. So.
During mating season, most likely.
Yes.
Be very quiet. I'm hunting crate dragons. It's mating season.
Very nice. Very nice. And Carl, how can people get in contact with us if they want to respond to this matchup or anything else on the show?
Well, they can, of course, find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Wampa's Lair Podcast. And also you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Wampa's Lair. And you can always send us an email at wampuslairpodcast@gmail.com. So the options are endless.
Yes. And Joe, is there any contact information that you would like to, any other contact information you'd like to give our listeners out there if they want to get in contact with you?
Sure. HollowNetAudioDramas.com is my new home, but Dark Empire Radio on iTunes. You can email me at DarkEmpireRadio@aim.com. That is the best way to get a hold of me.
Very good. Very good. Anything else, Mr. LeClaire?
That'll do. Joe, again, thank you for coming on. It's been an honor and a pleasure and fun, as per always.
Oh, it's been an absolute fun pleasure to be here in the lair with you guys and all of your Larians. And by the way, if any of you take up arms, if any of your fans take up arms, does that mean that they have lariats? I just thought I'd throw that out there.
Oh, the wit of the brutal one. Well, that about wraps up this episode of the Wampa's Lair podcast. This has been episode number 56. Where are you taking this thing? I am Jason, and for Joe, Lord Bruticus, and Carl, we will see you next time here in the Wampa's Lair.